The Golden State Warriors official podcast entering a new era. And our first guest in this new era, former Warrior, and now the television analyst for the team, be joining Bob Fitzgerald on the broadcast. And we're so excited that you're doing it. And we're so glad that you're here, Kalena Azubuike. And Kalena, when you look at this new phase of your career, does it at all feel like when you started your NBA playing career?
It kind of does. And thanks for having me, by the way. Glad to be the first guest. It does feel really new. I'm excited about the new role I have. I loved what I was doing before with NBC Sports Bay Area, working with Gary St. Jean and Greg Papa. Those are my guys. I love them. And I'm glad I still get to do a good amount of games with them pre and post game, the national TV games. But I'm excited to work with Bob. He's obviously a professional. He's been doing this for a long time. He's great at what he does. I'm just looking forward to having fun. And it kind of does feel like I'm a rookie. I think Tim Roy actually already called me a rookie for being on this current trip right now. But I love basketball. I love watching. I love breaking it down. I love watching film. I love telling fans why things are happening and the way I see it. I kind of approach it like I did when I played, honestly. I love watching film and trying to figure out, as a player, what I can do better, how I can be more effective, what spots I could have gotten to that maybe I didn't get to. And as a broadcaster, I kind of approach it the same way. I've already watched the first two games I did. I love watching the game back and just seeing, if I'm thinking about it as a fan watching the game, what do I want to hear from myself, right? And so that's kind of how I watch it back. And I love watching back just Warriors film because of the way they play basketball. It's so much fun to watch, the way they get into their plays, the way they move the ball, the way they want to play, and figuring out how they can be effective too. So it's been amazing so far, and I think the season is going to be wonderful. Obviously, Chase Center is an incredible state-of-the-art arena. I'm happy to be working in there, and we got a new booth in there, a nice shiny new booth with a green screen, all that stuff. So it's going to be a really interesting year.
And you got to make this trip. That's not a rookie mistake.
It's not. I was like, well, Tim, what are you talking about? We're going to L.A. It's beautiful weather there. I get to watch basketball. Why would I not want to come on this trip? I didn't understand.
And furthermore, we got to get to know these guys and start up different kinds of conversations and learn about what this team will be. And when you think of what expectations for this season would be for this Warriors team ahead, when you've seen what's gone down already in the preseason, and we're taping this at Staples Center in the middle of the Warriors preseason, as October 24th, the team will tip off against the Clippers at Chase Center, a brand new regular season, and you kind of think of what's to come. What do you expect?
Honestly, a lot of people don't know what to expect. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what kind of team this is, but I think if they can just stay above water while Klay's out, and hopefully whenever he does come back, he gets back and he's totally healthy and he's playing extremely well like he normally does, they can get to the playoffs. No one's going to want to play them in the playoffs. So I think they can surprise a lot of people. But at the same time, it's kind of a fresh new feel for the fans, I think. It's kind of fun to be able to come to a game and not be sure if the Warriors are going to win this game. And the fact that every single game is super important this year. It's not like past years where you just go down the schedule and it's WWWW and it almost becomes, okay, which team is going to catch the Warriors sleeping and not playing the way they're capable of playing. Now it's the Warriors have to have that sense of urgency. And I think a lot of teams are really chomping at the bit to play the Warriors because they've put it on a lot of teams in years past. Now teams feel like they do have a shot at the title and they're legit championship contenders. They're going to come in against the Warriors and be chomping at the bit to really play them and see if they can kind of pay back what they got from them in recent years. So it's an interesting year. And again, if they can make the playoffs, doesn't matter what seed, no one is going to want to play this team. And to me, they still have chemistry on their side over a lot of these newly formed contenders with monster tandems, Clippers, Lakers, Houston, even a team like Dallas, who I think is kind of under the radar, and they got Porzingis and Doncic. That's going to be an exciting team to watch. I don't know if they're ready to take the next step as far as making the playoffs and everything, but they could make the playoffs. So there's a lot of teams. I think Utah's incredible. There's a lot of teams that thinking they have a shot at the championship, and the Warriors are still one of those teams. Draymond and the players feel like they can still go to the finals, so I'm not going to be the one to say they can't. I just think it's going to be an interesting year as far as, okay, how are they going to be defensively in their backcourt while Klay's out? D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry, are they going to play a lot more zone? We've already seen them do that in the preseason. And the chemistry. There's a lot of new faces. What is their bench going to be like? There's a lot of rambunctious young talent here that is obviously not afraid to be aggressive and look to score, and they need that. They need production from their bench. They need production from these young guys. They're going to have to play the young guys. There's a lot of new faces and young guys on this team, and they got to play and get production from those guys. So can they get that from on a night-in, night-out basis consistently? And that's going to be a question. I think it's possible they can. There's a lot of talent here. So, again, anything can happen. I'm just saying, once they make the playoffs, no one's going to want to play them. Draymond says they still can make the finals. I'm not going to say they can.
You know, you talk about Klay working his way back. And when you think about your own personal experience of working back from a knee injury and what it took to play again, when you think about what he's doing and what it is, please help us understand the process.
It feels really redundant. It feels like you're doing the same thing every single day. And you just got to keep at it. Sometimes you got to kind of play games with yourself and see if you can get just like a tad bit stronger with different exercises you're doing, whether it be strengthening, stability, whatever it is you're doing. A lot of it is core work. Like, you're working out, you're trying to get your knee back, but you're working on your core, you're working on your hips, you're working on your IT bands, you're working on all these different muscles. And you just got to trust the process. It's cliche, but that's what you have to do. And it's not easy to do. And Klay Thompson is a mentally strong human being. You got to be mentally strong to get back from these injuries and come back better. And that's what Klay Thompson wants to do. His injury is one that obviously surgeons are really familiar with, and we've seen a lot of guys come back strong from that, so I don't think anyone doubts that he's going to come back strong. But it's still tough just getting injured, having to sit on the sidelines while your teammates, your brothers are out there fighting. You want to be out there scrapping with them. It can be frustrating, and you're chomping at the bit to get out there and practice and just do something, run. And you got to trust the training staff, you got to trust the work that you're doing, and not rush it, because if you rush back and you re-injure it, you're going to regret it. And you're not going to be able to sleep at night knowing that you rush back. So I think the training staff here is doing a great job. He's going to take his time. He's going to be patient. And he's not going to come back until he's 100% ready. And then once he's back, all bets are off.
We're joined by Kalena Azubuike here on the Warriors official team podcast. Again, a new era. We're bringing longer form conversations to the fore here. And thinking of broadcasting, we had the great opportunity to spend a couple of summer leagues doing broadcasts with Kevin Dana and R.C. Davis, you and I on some of those broadcasts. And you've been at this for a while in various regards and you know, G League Showcase, more than just on set with the analyst role in studio for NBC Sports Bay Area, but doing these games. I mean, you and Kevin Dana, a great pairing. When you kind of think about when you listen to analysts that you've heard as you've kind of gotten ready for this, what is it that you like to hear?
I like to hear them sound like they're having a good time, honestly. I like to hear them just sound like they're talking to me and not change their voice to make it sound like they're official or like they're broadcasting a game. Just talk, you know what I mean? And you can talk loud if that's the way you are. I think that comes through. If you're trying to change up and be something different for the camera, people can tell, and I can tell when I listen. So that's what I like to hear, and that's what I want to be. I just want to be myself. I want to be authentic. I want to watch the game the way I like to watch the game. I want to answer questions that I would like to have answered for the fans. And honestly, I think that's a fun way to listen to games. Like, if you're listening to a game and you feel like the broadcaster is almost talking to you at times, and you have questions in your head and they're answering it like right off the bat, or why did that play happen, or how was he How could he possibly be that wide open? Steph Curry, why would he ever be wide open? So I want to explain that to them, right? So that's kind of what I want to hear. I want to hear why things are happening, and I just want the broadcaster to be themselves and have a good time.
At what point did you think in your mind this is something you might want to be doing if not playing?
Honestly, when I was playing, I used to watch a lot of sports shows and talk shows, sports talk shows. I would listen to games and listen to the broadcasters, and I always thought it'd be fun to get into broadcasting in some form or capacity. I wasn't exactly sure when I was playing what that would be. And then once I was done, after taking some time off, I went to the Broadcaster U, Sports Broadcaster U, that the NBA Players Association put on. And that was in Syracuse, and it was kind of like a boot camp thing. They put us through the gauntlet. We went, we did color, we did radio, all simulated, right? So we did color during the game, we did radio, we did studio stuff, and they would tell us a few tips, pointers, talk to us for like 5 minutes. It wasn't like these long, boring lectures where you fall asleep. It was exciting. It was like 5 minute snippets where they tell us and give us some tips, and then they threw us out there, you know, and just let us do our thing. And we got better and better each day, and they let us watch the clips back and be like, okay, see, you're doing this, you're doing that. And we're like, okay, yeah, we get it. So I just kind of fell in love with it. And it wasn't just that they put us on camera and let us do our thing. It was they showed us the behind the scenes. They talked about what goes into a broadcast, the production, all those different things. And it was really all fascinating to me. And I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. So as soon as I did that, I reached out to Jim Barnett, actually, who I obviously, while I was playing here, he was still the color commentator, and we were great friends. We'd always talk, and I just reached out to him for advice, and it's like, I want to get in the business, what do you think? And so he gave me some great advice, and he was like, actually, I'll let me put you in touch with NBC Sports Bay Area. So he is a big reason I'm even here right now, because he put me in touch with NBC Sports Bay Area and kind of got the ball rolling there. So I'm forever grateful to him, and he's still a great friend. We always talk on the plane, everything. So I'm really happy that he's still going to be on trips, and we'll do dinner and all that stuff. So but that's kind of how it was when I was playing. I'd always watch and think about what it would look like if I was in broadcasting in some form of capacity, and I'm just having a blast, man.
It's awesome, and I'm biased as being somebody who spent the majority of their broadcasting career in the Bay Area. I really do feel like we have one of the best media cultures in sports in, you know, all of North America. When you look at who we get to work with working in the Bay Area, you know, Greg Papa, Saint, Jim Barnett, Fitz, Tim, Tom Tolbert. So, I mean, it's a great broadcast crew around the Warriors, and really just great broadcasting for sports in the Bay Area. And it's I love that your approach to it is that we're just talking here. I'm gonna show you some things. I think that is the perfect thing for the Bay Area. It's gonna be fun to hear you on the broadcast. Now, for the This Is Your Life portion of the show, you know, I always see in your bio, London, UK. You're born in London, and I mean, I have to say it this way. I mean, take us back to the UK and the early parts of your life, and what brought your family there, and then what brought you to Tulsa.
Right. So my parents are actually Nigerian, and they were trying to get to the States originally, but they couldn't get there. My dad had an issue with his green card or something. Apparently, a lot of Nigerians moved to London, and we were one of those. So my parents moved there. They had all of us. We were all born in London, me and my siblings and I. And King's College, we were in Peckham while we were there. We weren't there very long, but my parents still wanted to get us to the States. So as soon as my dad was able to, with the green card issue and all that stuff, we moved to the States. And they put us in a Christian school, Victory Christian. We grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We were there for pretty much our whole childhood, and we grew up there until I was a senior at Victory Christian. And then Kentucky, I got a scholarship there. It's funny, Tubby Smith and his family were good friends of ours because they lived in Tulsa Tubby Smith coached at TU for a while. His son and I, Brian, played in the YMCA league together. So our families would always meet at the YMCA and we'd sit together. They would sit together and they'd watch us play. So we developed a relationship with him. When he went to Kentucky, it was kind of a natural thing. I committed there, scholarship there. So I went to Kentucky, stayed there 3 years, ended up leaving early, didn't get drafted, got hurt during workouts, missed more than half my workouts, pulled my groin, missed the combine and the pre-draft camp and all that stuff, and ended up not getting drafted. So I was thinking about going overseas, but I felt like I belong in the league. So I ended up in the G League, played there for about the equivalent of a season, and got called up January 1st, 2007. And it was Don Nelson and Baron Davis and Jason Richardson and Monte Ellis and Mike Dunleavy, who works for the Warriors now. So that was an incredible experience, and Baron Davis and the veterans really made it an easy not an easy transition, but about as easy as a transition could be, going from G League to the NBA. Gave me a lot of confidence. Just said, it's still basketball. We're just all better up here. Just play your game, score where we need you to score. There's a lot of injuries. So that's kind of how my life went, from London to the NBA, and I actually got to go back to London like 5 years ago for the first time since I was born there, and it was a cool experience. But yeah, I've kind of been all over the place.
And basketball has brought us all to places we never expected to go. And one trip that you made to Tanzania, and I always think of that country as one of the very charitable and wonderful things that Stephen Curry has always been a part of, with nothing but nets, bringing bed nets to Tanzania and their fight to eradicate malaria. And you had gone for a world summit with, economics and thinking about how to make a more viable economy and healthy situation for families in Africa. And what, when you are asked to do something like that, goes through your mind? And then when you get there and you're learning what you're learning and what you want to take forward to bring, not back to necessarily a community in the United States, but bring back to a continent that needs help. What are you thinking of when you're asked to be a part of something like that?
Well, first of all, I always wanted to get back to Africa because that's where my parents were from, and my dad never let us go for different reasons. So as soon as the opportunity came up, I jumped on it, and we got there. It was eye-opening, and we were able to bring mosquito nets and a bunch of shoes and clothing and gear for the kids, and we visited orphanages, and there was a water well built and all those different things. So we did some great work there, and it was really eye-opening because the attitudes of the kids there, when you go to the orphanages and you hear these stories, these kids, some of them are left out on the street by their parents just in front of the orphanage, and they're picked up and they're brought in, and there's a ton of kids in like a classroom that's just not a very big classroom. They don't have shoes, they don't have anything, but they got smiles on their faces and great attitudes. And it changes your perspective. You go there and you come back and you're like, I should never, ever complain about anything. I mean, am I kidding? Like, these kids have the best attitudes, and that's just life for them. It's all they know. And we come in there and they got smiles on their faces. We're playing with them, we're talking with them, and we give them like the shoes and mosquito nets, and their faces light up. It's just an incredible experience, and I was glad I was able to go. I want to do more stuff like that. I've been able to do more stuff like that, trips and different things to places, and just giving back is what it's all about. And being able to see and experience different cultures and different countries around the world, and seeing what people deal with, it kind of keeps you grounded and keeps your eyes open, and hopefully it keeps your attitude right. You know, you check your attitude and you think about trips like that, and it just makes me go, I shouldn't complain about anything. So we're thankful. I'm thankful for the opportunities I've had in life and how fortunate I've been. And a lot of people aren't as fortunate, and you remember that and you pray for them. But when you can get over there and actually do work and touch people in different ways, whether it's whatever you're able to give them, the mosquito nets or shoes or whatever, it's always a blessing, not only to them, but to you, really.
You know, understanding the culture, too, is very important. There have been two films that I've seen recently that were really impressive. One Annie Buford directed called Elevate, and it was talking about, you know, players who had played in Africa and came over to prep schools in the United States. And then Masai Ujiri's Giants of Africa program, it was only available in Canada when we were just there for the finals, being able to see this film, because it hadn't been released in the United States yet. But some of what the league is doing, what key executives are doing, and what work like what you had done to be a part of that and just let people know that, you know, this is all very aspirational, what the NBA is and represents, but it can be part of your life in a meaningful way. It's just really special. I'm so glad you had that opportunity.
Oh, definitely. And basketball without borders is something the NBA has done for a long time. They're expanding the game. You said there's a lot of talent in Africa that just needs to be unlocked, and when the NBA goes over there, whether it's different players taking different trips or whoever taking trips, they are able to show these kids that, hey, you can end up in the NBA, and you can maybe not just end up in the NBA or do whatever you want to with your life. And they're able to provide opportunities for kids that maybe didn't have those opportunities before, and give them clothes or whatever it is they're lacking. So being able to go over there and touch people, whether it's Africa or wherever it is, India, where any of these countries, we got to go to Israel and to see the separation there, that was really eye-opening. And then to see how basketball can kind of bridge gaps. Like we went to Israel, and there's like neighborhoods that are separated by walls, and there are kids that live 2 minutes from each other that never have seen what their neighbors' faces look like because it's separated by a wall, because this group of people say that we own this land and you shouldn't be allowed in here, whatever the issue is. Religion, there's a lot of religion disputes over there in Israel. But then we come and we're able to do a basketball camp, and it brings people together, and people forget about their differences and forget about their whatever religious backgrounds they come from and whatever the differences there, whatever the disputes are there, and they're able to come together and play basketball and have a good time together. And they realize, you know, the person on the other side of that wall maybe isn't so bad. We can get along. So basketball and sports in general is just so important, obviously economically and all those things, but just bringing people together and giving people a reason to work together. It's pretty cool.
I remember seeing dispatches from that when you were there and thinking what a special program it is that Arn Tellem helped create part of the process. Yeah, and it really started a passion project for sure for him. For you, passion projects have included movies and music, and kind of help us understand a film project a couple years back.
Yeah, it was called Mid-Range, and it was fun. It was a good experience. We kind of got involved with the film when it was probably halfway done, and we kind of brought in the money and helped out with some of the production and got it to the finish line. It ended up being a cool product at the end, and we want to do maybe film in the future. Maybe not in the immediate future, but it was a Christian film, and we were able to do it with friends, and it was just a cool little project that we were able to be a part of, and we got to share it with some churches, and we got some good feedback on it. We learned a lot of things. There's a lot that goes into making a movie, man, a ton, and there's a lot of things we'll probably do differently in the future. And then music, I've always been passionate about music. I've been making beats since maybe junior high, and just got better and better, and just been learning more and more about what goes into making a good beat. And sometimes it seems simple. You listen to something and it seems like there's maybe five instruments, but when you talk about putting different instruments in the background, the band pass, low pass, high pass, all those different things to make a song or a beat sound 3D almost instead of 2D. I've been learning more and more about that, and that's pretty cool. And obviously during the season I don't make beats as much because I'm, you know, busy, but during the off season I get a chance to do a little more of that and get in the studio, and I've been in contact with some artists here and there. So it's pretty cool. I'm a creative person. I feel like I'm an artist in different ways. I love to draw, I love painting. I haven't done a lot of that lately, but I love just creating, and being able to create a beat from scratch and then hear it and actually like it, and then you let people listen to it and they have a reaction, you see their eyes light up, that's an incredible feeling to me. So that's something I love to do, and I try to do that more during the off season, and we'll see what happens as far as who ends up on my beats, what artists or whatever. I don't even really care about that. I just love creating, and it's been a hobby of mine for a long time. So that's kind of how I am with music. I guess I get it from my parents. They were pretty musical, and my older brother plays piano. He sings a little bit. He's led praise and worship at some churches. My younger sister actually is a praise and worship leader at our church in Denver called Red Rocks, and she's an incredible singer. Her stuff's on iTunes. Younger brother plays bass. So we're all pretty like musically inclined. I'm the one that didn't end up playing an instrument. I tried playing drums for a while. It didn't work out. I tried playing sax. Just never stuck with it. I was in band class, and we'd go to like a performance or whatever, and I would be the person acting like I'm playing and letting everybody else drown me out. So that was my experience with the saxophone. I got into it because people said Kenny G was cool, and I thought he was too, I guess, and it didn't work out for me. But I can act like I can play all those instruments with different VSTs on the computer and all that stuff, so it's pretty cool.
The beat making is a bug that you can catch like get deep into, from FL Studio to throwing things into Reason, and like
that's what I use, FL Studio, and then Omnisphere for different sounds on there, and I got Play VSTs. I got a lot of instruments on there, like trumpets. They got it to where it's real instruments now, and it's crazy. It's crazy how they do it.
You say that. This is playing an instrument now. I mean, I've been really rationalizing that myself and like looking at how computer music is really no different than playing an analog instrument, except you're controlling it a different way, and it opens up all kinds of opportunities for collaboration and really fun things. And listen, we will continue these conversations as we go throughout. And thank you again for joining us on what is really the maiden voyage of a new form of the Golden State Warriors official podcast. And just to kind of wrap things up with a thought that one of the things that has made sort of the Warriors broadcasting situation so great for so long is that everyone really is friends. And it's so nice to have another awesome dude and friendly person join the efforts here, because it's been an unbelievable experience to watch the team on the court, but I hope the fans really do feel, from all the different things that Warriors broadcasters do to express the stories, that they love this as much as fans do. And I'm just so thrilled that this is where we're going this season. And thank you so much, Glenna.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad to be on the podcast, and I'm super excited about this season. You talked about so many different stories to tell, so many different angles, Chase Center, all the new faces, the chemistry, how's it going to work out, how long is Clay going to be, all those different things. It's going to be a really fun season. I hope the fans enjoy it.
For our broadcast director, R.C. Davis, and our executive producer, Brett Winkler, and all of this coming to you from Staples Center as the Warriors wrap up the preseason. Again, a big thank you to Glenna Ozebuki for joining us. I'm Lawrence Scott, and this is Warrior Sound.